Chapter 20. Letter Hart's blood out immediately, which frightened her and me too. She cried, said she had been told so in the house where I lodged. But this aggravated him more than before, that she should put so far upon him, and run things such a length upon no other authority than a hearsay, and then, turning to me again, said very honestly, he was afraid we were both undone. For, to be plain, my dear, I have no estate, apostrophe says he. What little I had, this devil has made me run out in waiting on you, and putting me into this equipage. Apostrophe she took the opportunity of his being earnest in talking with me, and got out of the room, and I never saw her more. I was confounded now as much as he, and knew not what to say. I thought many ways, that I had the worst of it, but his saying he was undone, and that he had no estate neither, put me into a mere distraction. Why, apostrophe says I to him, this has been a hellish juggle, for we are married here upon the foot of a double fraud. You are undone by the disappointment, it seems, and if I had had a fortune I had been cheated to, for you say you have nothing. Apostrophe, you would indeed have been cheated, my dear, apostrophe says he, but you would not have been undone, for number 15,000 would have maintained us both very handsomely in this country. And I assure you, apostrophe added he, I had resolved to have dedicated every groat of it to you. I would not have wronged you of a shilling, and the rest I would have made up in my affection to you, and tenderness of you, as long as I lived. Apostrophe, this was very honest indeed, and I really believe he spoke as he intended, and that he was a man that was as well qualified to make me happy, as to his temper and behavior, as any man ever was. But his having no estate, and being run into debt on this ridiculous account in the country, made all the prospect dismal and dreadful, and I knew not what to say, or what to think of myself. I told him it was very unhappy, that so much love, and so much good nature as I discovered in him, should be thus precipitated into misery, that I saw nothing before us but ruin. For as to me, it was my unhappiness, that what little I had, was not able to relieve us weak, and with that I pulled out a bank bill of number 20 and 11 guineas, which I told him I had saved out of my little income, and that by the account that creature had given me of the way of living in that country, I expected it would maintain me 3 or 4 years, that if it was taken from me, I was left destitute, and he knew what the condition of a woman among strangers must be, if she had no money in her pocket. However, I told him, if he would take it, there it was. He told me with a great concern, and I thought I saw tears stand in his eyes, that he would not touch it, that he abhorred the thoughts of stripping me, and make me miserable, that, on the contrary, he had 50 guineas left, which was all he had in the world, and he pulled it out, and threw it down on the table, bidding me take it, though he were to starve for want of it. I returned, with the same concern for him, that I could not bear to hear him talk so, that, on the contrary, if he could propose any probable method of living, I would do anything that became me on my part, and that I would live as close, and as narrow as he could desire. He begged of me to talk no more at that rate, for it would make him distracted. He said he was bred a gentleman, though he was reduced to a low fortune, and that there was but one way left which he could think of, and that would not do, unless I could answer him one question, which, however, he said he would not press me to. I told him I would answer it honestly, whether it would be to his satisfaction or not, that I could not tell. Why, then, my dear, tell me plainly, apostrophe says he, will the little you have keep us together in any figure, or in any station or place, or will it not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it was my happiness hitherto, that I had not discovered myself, or my circumstances at all, no, not so much as my name, and seeing these was nothing to be expected from him, however good-humored, and however honest he seemed to be, but to live on what I knew, would soon be wasted, I resolved to conceal everything but the bank bill, and the 11 guineas which I had owned, and I would have been very glad to have lost that, and have been set down where he took me up. I had indeed another bank bill about me of number 30, which was the whole of what I brought with me, as well to subsist on in the country, as not knowing what might offer, because this creature, the go-between that had thus betrayed us both, had made me believe strange things of my marrying to my advantage in the country, and I was not willing to be without money, whatever might happen. This bill I concealed, and that made me the freer of the rest, in consideration of his circumstances, for I really pitied him heartily. But to return to his question, I told him I never willingly deceived him, and I never would. I was very sorry to tell him that the little I had would not subsist us, that it was not sufficient to subsist me alone in the South Country, and that this was the reason that made me put myself into the hands of that woman who called him brother, she having assured me that I might board very handsomely at a town called Manchester, where I had not yet been, for about number 6 a year, and my whole income not being about number 15 a year, I thought I might live easy upon it, and wait for better things. He shook his head and remained silent, and a very melancholy evening we had. However, we supped together, and lay together that night, and when we had almost supped he looked a little better and more cheerful, and called for a bottle of wine. "Come, my dear," apostrophe says he, "though the case is bad, it is to no purpose to be dejected. Come, be as easy as you can. I will endeavor to find out some way or other to live. If you can but subsist yourself, that is better than nothing. I must try the world again. A man ought to think like a man. To be discouraged is to yield to the misfortune." Apostrophe with this, he filled a glass, and drank to me, holding my hand and pressing it hard in his hand all the while the wine went down, and protesting afterwards his main concern was for me. It was really a true, gallant spirit he was of, and it was the more grievous to me. 'Tis something of relief, even to be undone by a man of honor, rather than by a scoundrel. But here the greatest disappointment was on his side, for he had really spent a great deal of money, deluded by this madam the procuress, and it was very remarkable on what poor terms he proceeded. First, the baseness of the creature herself is to be observed, who, for the getting number 100 herself, could be content to let him spend 3 or 4 more, though perhaps it was all he had in the world, and more than all, when she had not the least ground, more than a little tea-table chat, to say that I had any estate, or was a fortune, or the like. It is true the design of deluding a woman of fortune, if I had been so, was base enough. The putting the face of great things upon poor circumstances was a fraud, and bad enough, but the case a little differed too, and that in his favor, for he was not a rake that made a trade to delude women, and, as some have done, get 6 or 7 fortunes after one another, and then rifle and run away from them. But he was really a gentleman, unfortunate and low, but had lived well. And though, if I had had a fortune, I should have been enraged at the slut for betraying me, yet really for the man, a fortune would not have been ill bestowed on him, for he was a lovely person indeed, of generous principles, good sense, and of abundance of good humor. We had a great deal of close conversation that night, for we neither of us slept much. He was as penitent for having put all those cheats upon me, as if it had been felony, and that he was going to execution. He offered me again every shilling of the money he had about him, and said he would go into the army, and seek the world for more. I asked him why he would be so unkind to carry me into Ireland, when I might suppose he could not have subsisted me there. He took me in his arms. "My dear," apostrophe said he, "depend upon it, I never designed to go to Ireland at all, much less to have carried you thither, but came hither to be out of the observation of the people, who had heard what I pretended to, and withal, that nobody might ask me for money, before I was furnished to supply them." Apostrophe, "but where then," apostrophe said I, "were we to have gone next?" Apostrophe, "why, my dear," apostrophe said he, "I'll confess the whole scheme to you as I had laid it. I purposed here to ask you something about your estate. As you see I did, and when you, as I expected you would, had entered into some account with me of the particulars, I would have made an excuse to you to have put off our voyage to Ireland for some time, and to have gone first towards London. Then, my dear, apostrophe said he, I resolved to have confessed all the circumstances of my own affairs to you, and let you know I had indeed made use of these artifices to obtain your consent to marry me, but had now nothing to do, but ask to your pardon, and to tell you how abundantly, as I have said above, I would endeavor to make you forget what was past, by the felicity of the days to come. Apostrophe, truly, apostrophe said I to him, I find you would soon have conquered me, and it is my affliction now, that I am not in a condition, to let you see how easily I should have been reconciled to you, and have passed by all the tricks you had put upon me, in recompense of, so much good humor. But, my dear, apostrophe said I, what can we do now? We are both undone, and what better are we for our being reconciled together, seeing we have nothing to live on? Apostrophe, apostrophe, we proposed a great many things, but nothing could offer where there was nothing to begin with. He begged me at last, to talk no more of it, for, he said, I would break his heart. So we talked of other things a little, till at last he took a husband's leave of me, and so we went to sleep. He rose before me in the morning, and indeed, having lain awake almost all night, I was very sleepy, and lay till near 11 o'clock. In this time he took his horses and 3 servants, and all his linen and baggage, and away he went, leaving a short, but moving letter for me on the table, as follows. My dear, I am a dog. I have abused you, but I have been drawn into do it by a base creature, contrary to my principle and the general practice of my life. Forgive me, my dear. I ask your pardon with the greatest sincerity. I am the most miserable of men, in having deluded you. I have been so happy to possess you, and now am so wretched, as to be forced to fly from you. Forgive me, my dear. Once more I say, forgive me. I am not able to see you ruined by me, and myself unable to support you. Our marriage is nothing. I shall never be able to see you again. I here discharge you from it. If you can marry to your advantage, do not decline it on my account. I here swear to you on my faith, and on the word of a man of honor, I will never disturb your repose, if I should know of it, which, however, is not likely. On the other hand, if you should not marry, and if good fortune should befall me, it shall be all yours, wherever you are. I have put some of the stock of money I have left into your pocket. Take places for yourself and your maid in the stagecoach, and go for London. I hope it will bear your charges thither, without breaking into your own. Again I sincerely ask your pardon, and will do so as often as I shall ever think of you. Adieu, my dear, forever. I am, your most affectionately, J. E. apostrophe, nothing that ever befell me in my life sank so deep into my heart as this farewell. I reproached him 1,000 times in my thoughts for leaving me, for I would have gone with him through the world, if I had begged my bread. I felt in my pocket, and there found 10 guineas, his gold watch, and 2 little rings, one a small diamond ring worth only about number 6, and the other a plain gold ring. I sat me down and looked upon these things 2 hours together, and scarce spoke a word, till my maid interrupted me, by telling me my dinner was ready. I ate but little, and after dinner I fell into a vehement fit of crying, every now and then calling him by his name, which was James. Oh, Jemmy! Apostrophe said I, come back, come back. I'll give you all I have. I'll beg, I'll starve with you. Apostrophe and thus I ran raving about the room several times, and then sat down between whiles, and then walking about again, called upon him to come back, and then cried again, and thus I passed the afternoon, till about 7 o'clock, when it was near dusk, in the evening, being August, when, to my unspeakable surprise, he comes back into the inn, but without a servant, and comes directly up into my chamber. I was in the greatest confusion imaginable, and so was he too. I could not imagine what should be the occasion of it, and began to be at odds with myself, whether to be glad or sorry. But my affection biased all the rest, and it was impossible to conceal my joy, which was too great for smiles, for it burst out into tears. He was no sooner entered the room, but he ran to me, and took me in his arms, holding me fast, and almost stopping my breath with his kisses, but spoke not a word. At length I began. "My dear," apostrophe said I, "how could you go away from me?" Apostrophe apostrophe to which he gave no answer, for it was impossible for him to speak. When our ecstasies were a little over, he told me he was gone about 15 miles, but it was not in his power to go any farther without coming back to see me again, and to take his leave of me once more. I told him how I had passed my time, and how loud I had called him to come back again. He told me he heard me very plain upon Delamere Forest, at a place about 12 miles off. I smiled. "Nay, apostrophe," says he, "do not think I am in jest, for if ever I heard your voice in my life, I heard you call me aloud, and sometimes I thought I saw you running after me." Apostrophe "Why, apostrophe," said I, "what did I say?" Apostrophe apostrophe for I had not named the words to him. "You called aloud," apostrophe says he, "and said, 'Oh Jemmy, oh Jemmy, come back, come back.'" Apostrophe, I laughed at him. "My dear," apostrophe says he, "do not laugh, for, depend upon it, I heard your voice as plain as you hear mine now. If you please, I'll go before a magistrate and make oath of it." Apostrophe I then began to be amazed and surprised, and indeed frightened, and told him what I had really done, and how I had called after him, as above. When we had amused ourselves a while about this, I said to him, "Well, you shall go away from me no more. I'll go all over the world with you rather." Apostrophe he told me it would be very difficult thing for him to leave me, but since it must be, he hoped I would make it as easy to me as I could. But as for him, it would be his destruction that he foresaw. However, he told me that he considered he had left me to travel to London alone, which was too long a journey, and that as he might as well go that way as any way else, he was resolved to see me safe thither, or near it. And if he did go away then without taking his leave, I should not take it ill of him, and this he made me promise. He told me how he had dismissed his 3 servants, sold their horses, and sent the fellows away to seek their fortunes, and all in a little time, at a town on the road, I know not where. And, apostrophe says he, it cost me some tears all alone by myself, to think how much happier they were than their master, for they. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.